Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
From the Palmetto Swamps, to the Piney Woods, to the Oak Flats, you're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. Come on.
You're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast, presented by Scree Gear, Performance Hunting Apparel, and if Santa Claus does not bring you any Scree Gear, or depending on when you're listening to this, if he doesn't, or if you've already found out that he didn't or hasn't, then still very well stocked. You can use the code LABH for 20% off regularly priced items on your first purchase, and there's always lots of sales going on. Follow them on YouTube and social media, find out more about their products, and shop online, ScreeGear.com. It's Merry Christmas. Are you ready for Christmas, Kyler? Everybody, or is it? As we're recording this, it's not quite Christmas yet, but I think it will be when most people listen. So, you and your family ready?
Yes, sir. Absolutely, man. My mom just got in town, and I've got extra. Well, I've got extra butane cartridges for the thermocell, and I've washed my early season pants. Yes, I'm ready for Christmas this year.
So you have young children, so Christmas is very with or without. So here let me get all old school, old man, old school on you, like I'm an old man or something. But
you are old.
So for me, with older children, and they're not really old, but I have they're old enough to, they don't admit that they don't believe in Santa Claus, because of course that comes with ramifications, but
sure.
They're old enough. I've had a young teenager and another getting close. And so they recognize that it doesn't feel like Christmas, you know, not that it hasn't all week, but I mean, they both have made comments like, I can't believe, is it really going to be 80 degrees on Christmas? But with you, with younger kids, they don't, that doesn't affect them as much. It's still Santa Claus.
Not at all. No, they're the only gauge of Christmas to my 4 and 2 year old is how many presents are under the tree, and that pile continues to grow daily the last week of Christmas. So
isn't it kind of funny though, because we have the ups and downs, and it seems like probably 3-4 of the last 6 or 7 years it's been downs. But it just feels a lot more like Christmas when it's cold outside.
Oh, absolutely.
When you walk outside and your kids run out to play with whatever they got on Christmas morning, and they have to put on, you know, a toboggan or a beanie and a hoodie at least or whatever, and it just feels, it's cold out and all that. It just feels like Christmas. And we don't get enough of that down here. Especially not this year. We're gonna have 80 degrees. It's ridiculous.
They say that there's a big Arctic blast coming behind it, and then I don't know if it's gonna hold true to that, or if that's just somebody saying that, a weather reporter saying that for likes and follows, and then it'll just like fizzle out next week and be like, oh, we were wrong. It's still going to be 70 through the weekend. But anyway, regardless, the buck activity is increasing. I'm starting to see more deer on their feet, seeing more deer per hunt. I think it'll still be good this week, no matter what. Just have to break out the early season stuff again for a couple of days.
Yeah, it's I've noticed myself. I killed a deer yesterday, which we'll talk about. I actually came and hunted with you the first of the week, I did not see any buck activity, but I did see fresh sign that they're getting going everywhere I went, and you saw some buck activity while I was there hunting with you, and I know you've seen some since I left. And it is what it is. It's almost 2022. It's 2021, but you can gauge things by social media. The amount of deer being killed and trail camera pictures of bucks in the daylight that are popping up on social media on a daily basis is a pretty good gauge of what's going on, at least from a high level view. And there's a lot of that happening.
Absolutely.
A whole lot of that happening.
It always kicks off this time of year. And then you also have people that are coming back from whatever break they're on, whether it's high school or from college, or they're visiting family and whatever. Like this is the time of year. Christmas, Thanksgiving is the time of year where the people that have never given any indication whatsoever that they deer hunt at all season start shooting bucks. they go have Christmas at their papa's house in Northeast Louisiana and shoot a 145 off the stand. It's like, I didn't even know you had a hunting license. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. Sounds good. Thanks for jumping in the game, bypassing the last 3 months. It's kicking off. I think it's gonna stay hot and heavy no matter what the weather is, just because the full moon was so bright. God bless, it's been bright.
Yeah, it has. Very.
And I think it'll just keep moving, man. On pumping.
I actually, we don't have a guest for today's episode. Being the week of Christmas. And being that we've both got some more hunting than sometimes we have to talk about on the intros of these podcasts, and we're just gonna have just Kyler and I, we're talking about all of the pictures and all that. Our friend Brian Chamberlain, if we had a guest, would be our guest would be brought to you by Movement Mortgage for home buys, refis, any kind of mortgage needs, contact Brian Chamberlain at Movement Mortgage. Brian has actually sent me several pictures today he's got a bunch of Tacticams, and so he gets lots of inventory. Well, he's like throughout the day on three different occasions. Like the first one that came, he sends me a picture of this nice buck in the like mid-morning. He's like, and he captioned it, Daywalker, right? So gets a picture of Daywalker, and then another Daywalker, and then another Daywalker, and then lots of Daywalker. He sent me like five or six pictures of different bucks in the daylight that he hasn't been getting in the daylight. So of course I just sent him, do you need me to come shoot them for you? You know, but you know what he responded with? He says, well, no, I responded. He said, you know, something about the Daywalkers and, you know, whatever. And then I said, well, I guess Santa Claus is keeping a lot of them alive, referring to the fact that we're all at home getting ready for Christmas with our families and not spending as much time hunting, unless, of course, you hunt right behind your house or something. And he goes, yeah, well, I'm going to Missouri right after Christmas for what? And I'm like, why? Like, why? Why would you go to Missouri?
Like, yeah, you've so, I know why. Brian is in an industry where, and Brian works 25 hours a day. And it's not just Brian. It's every single mortgage originator, loan officer, anybody that's in the financial industry like that of home buying or lending, it's nonstop, man. Brian's the only person I know that I could call at 1 o'clock in the morning and he would answer, and I could call at 4:47 in the morning and he would answer, and he would have slept in between. Okay. that he's the only person I know. I've got a few other people I can start calling at like 5:30, 6 in the morning that I know would be up and would want to talk or could talk, but Brian would probably answer first ring at like 5 in the morning. Yeah. There's no doubt. And so Brian's a very hard worker. I know that for a fact because he handled my loan and we've been friends for a long time, but I have a lot of people that I know in that industry and it is nonstop, man. It never ends. So when the only way that he can have a break is to go away.
Yeah.
Like go over there, and over there happens to be Missouri right now.
And I'm like, man, so, you've been taking pictures of deer all night long for months, and they're finally on their feet in the daylight, and you're going to leave and go to another state where the rut's over with. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, one of my business partners is kind of in a similar situation. You know, Brian's got like 11 children also. Mm-hmm. And he's, I know he's got a bunch of girls. I want to say four.
No, he's got
maybe four,
he's got,
three.
He has three girls.
Three girls, a wife. So he's swimming in a sea of estrogen over there. And so his girls are at the age where they want to go hunting.
Yeah.
And his properties up in Mississippi are kind of set up to bring the girls. So he can't even like get away by himself to go. He's got to bring the kids hunting. And that's great. But like, I love to take my kids hunting. So I took my daughter rifle hunting this afternoon, believe it or not. That was weird. But that's every once in a while, you just got to go get away and like hit the reset button hard, turn your phone off. So I get why he's going out of town. So. That makes perfect sense to me. But well, my business partner is the same way. He's got a couple of 100 acres and a camp and very comfortable for the family and the wife and the kids and blah, blah, blah. But I don't mean this in a bad way, but you have no legitimate reason to go hunting by yourself and to just like escape for an afternoon. You always have this obligation to bring one, if not all three of your kids. And so to go out of state and just like get away is very appealing when you're in that situation, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, if you're looking for one of those pieces of property that we're talking about, or you got a piece and you're looking to move on from that, contact our friend Slade Priest, the Hunting Land Man, huntinglandmanms.com. He's got new properties coming up all the time. And if 2022 is right around the corner and you're looking to make a move and get into your, if this hunting season has gone in such a way that you said, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and finally start working on my own piece. Slade's not just a realtor. He's a passionate outdoorsman, loves what he does, and knows how to match up buyer and seller to get you in your dream piece of property for whatever your goals may be. So check out some of the listings he's got. They move really fast if you see something you want. He told us on a previous podcast, if you see something you like, you need to jump on it. If you're in that market or you're looking to move a piece, contact Slade Priest. Check him out on Facebook, Instagram, and check out his website, huntinglandmanms.com. So, I killed a deer yesterday. I had to go kill something because I spent 3 days with you not seeing anything. And
you're tumbling.
Nice segue. How's that work? Getting good at this.
Yeah.
I came up and stayed with you at your camp, something we've alluded to. Talked about that I was going to do. I haven't done for 2 years since we started talking about it. Finally made it, but we had a great time, man. You know, it's always interesting to me how the light switch works. And what I'm getting to with this is, you know, we've just finished talking about how many people were seeing kill bucks and how many people were seeing drop trail cam photos. It's obviously the bucks are on their feet, right? It's starting to just kind of a wave move across different areas. And it's only going to continue and get even greater over the coming weeks. But I went you know, come to your camp, and we went into a couple areas, and every area that I went into and hunted, there was fresh buck sign. And honestly, in every spot that I went into, there was at least some form, some amount of sign that had been made within 24 hours of me being there, whether it was a fresh scrape on the ground, fresh buck tracks, rubs on trees that look like they'd been hooked very recently, or some combination of all of those things, and no buck activity anywhere I sat. You know, and then on the other hand, you go into some areas where, like, for example, a friend of mine actually went and helped him look for a deer this afternoon. He shot at and missed on a food plot behind my house. And it's not a food plot where there's any, I mean, there's obviously bucks in the area, but there's no, like, fresh, that buck sign is not there, right? The deer I killed Wednesday, I knew the deer was going to be there. I did all my homework. That was all set up well. But to be honest with you, I wasn't hunting over buck sign. I was hunting over a travel corridor between, I was in a hardwood flat between two thickets, and I knew the deer's prime. I had figured out over the course of the last couple of months, this is a new piece of property I've never hunted before this year. Never hunted it at all. Yesterday, Wednesday was the only time I've ever hunted it, and I killed the deer. But I've been in there a couple times scouting and ran some cameras, and I knew which of these two thickets, which one was the staging area and which one was the primary bedding. And he was traveling from one to the other almost every morning. And there's buck sign in the area, but not where I was hunting, you know. So it's been mentioned before how I mentioned it, and you mentioned it to me earlier before we started the podcast, how it's interesting how when it gets to be this time of the year, the trail camera situation changes. You don't see a lot of deer on trail cameras, but you see deer from the stand. And in the same case here, you hunt the buck sign, you know he's making the sign, you know he's making it on a regular basis, but it seems like oftentimes they get shot in different areas where they're cruising for a deer or they're traveling from one area to the next. In my experience, I don't kill a lot of deer over the actual buck sign. The buck sign just tells me the buck's in the area. I've still got to figure out where to kill him at. And I think with the trail cameras, it's only natural for us to do one of two things with a trail camera. One, we put it over a food source, either man-made or otherwise. We put it over a food source because it's a likely common area where a deer's going to stand still and get its picture made because it's eaten. Or two, we put it on a travel, a well-used common travel corridor area, right, where the deer are passing through on a regular basis. This is their primary movement from A to B, wherever they're going or coming. So I think this is, you give your opinion after I give mine, but my opinion is, if you ever watch a buck that's cruising for does, and especially a buck, if you've seen a buck and you call to him and he makes his way over to you, if you watch how they act, they look like a tracking dog. They crisscross and they move in different patterns. They don't walk those same trails that you scout out and you put that camera on. They don't walk that trail not as directly, because they're trying to cross, they're trying to come across or pick up the scent of a doe so that they can go follow it out and see if she's an estrus. And I think the same thing is said for deer that are chasing does and actually doing the whole rut cycle. They kind of move in different patterns. And so I think, A, the deer aren't focusing on food, so your cameras, they're over food, unless they're in a common area like a food plot where they're going to pick up a broad area of view. That's going to go down because the deer aren't hitting those as often. They're just picking up browse along the way doing their other thing. And then, two, your commonly used trails may not be – there's not the same patterns. They're not using the same trails. They're doing different things.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you. I've really started – paying attention a lot to the difference between how young bucks react to the rut kicking off early compared to middle-aged or older mature bucks. And what's interesting is, you see the young bucks getting real amped up early and pushing does around that aren't ready yet. And they just see a doe and they start pushing it around. It's not even close to going into estrus yet. And they're just there. There's a doe and he's ready to go. And she's like, get the hell away from me. And she's still got her yearlings with her or whatever. That's usually how I can tell it's not close, but, or it's not kicked off yet. I mean, but, the more mature deer that I see on the ground will almost always be behind those young, stupid spike, young, you know, 1.5, 2.5 year old bucks. And, I'm going to kind of take this in a different direction real quick, rather than just talking about the rut, but talking about killing bigger deer in general. If you, especially this time of year or during the rut, if you see a smaller buck, even if it's maybe something that you want to kill, but isn't like a great deer, but would be like a good public land deer, almost exclusively this time of year, there would be a larger buck behind that. And he's sending that smaller, stupider deer out first. And so if you really, like if you're traveling somewhere, if you're going out of state or you're going to like say Mississippi or to your favorite NWR or WMA where you know it's got good rut activity this time of year, if you are trying to come home with something that's like a trophy or a really nice deer, until it's like hot and heavy rut where he's running around like an idiot, he's going to be behind a stupider deer that's walking out first and maybe even two of them. That happened to me on Wednesday morning. Yes. Wednesday morning. I had I thought it was a big doe. It was the largest button buck I'd ever seen. And then a big 10 point came behind him. But it was like 10 minutes later. So a lot of times, you know, and I've actually seen them do this. I was hunting out of state, a few years ago. And like it's still in the South though. And I had a train of bucks come across the corner of the slough, and at 75 yards away, 10 minutes after the last one crossed, the big buck was standing and finally came out to that slough edge and kind of like exposed himself. But it was after all the other two or three had cleared through. And so those big bucks are on their feet, but they're going to be watching what's happening to the other ones first.
Yeah,
that's my experience. I haven't seen much of the zigzag stuff this year from a deer that I would shoot, but I do see a lot of pestering going on from smaller bucks or spikes and 4 points and stuff like that.
I've always heard and have taken it to, I don't know if I'd say taken it to heart, but, I consider it to be solid information from people that I respect coming up and learning to be a better hunter, that it's really a kind of a logical based thing when you look at what we're talking about with the behavior of older deer. It's just like us as people, you know, as you get older, you become far more efficient in doing almost everything that you do. Number one, you don't have the energy and the stamina and maybe not even, outwardly the strength to be bullish and stupid like you were when you were young and in your prime when it comes to anything. And the same can be said for deer. You know, when they're younger, they don't know what they're doing. They're learning the process. I mean, God's given them the natural instinct that they know that they have to breed and reproduce, and that's just part of what they do, but they haven't experienced it enough. And then on top of that, the age and experience that they get, they learn how to be more efficient. And I think you're right that there's a period of time. So there's a weird dynamic, I think, that goes on where your older deer, from your mature deer to your very mature deer, even that whole dynamic, I think they, in some ways, you may never see them, and you may not ever really realize it, depending on the layout and the geography of where you're hunting. they let those young bucks tend those does and do all that. And then when they realize the doe's actually coming into estrus, they swoop in and they spend, they lock the doe down and try to breed the doe. You know, with that being said, depending on where you're at, there's so many does in such a high population in some areas that the immature younger bucks still end up getting to breed because they simply, you know, one mature or just a couple of mature bucks in an area can't breed every doe. If you've got in the South, we tend to have a pretty good density, right? You know, so if there's 15 or 20 does and there's only three mature bucks, they're not going to breed all of them if a lot of them come into estrus in the same week or something like that. But I think they do that, and I think that, it's an up-and-down kind of thing where they do all of those things. They act stupid. They chase. But they're just a lot more methodical about they do it. They don't exert a lot of effort and energy into anything because they're just wise, and they're smart, and they're efficient in the way that they handle themselves. I've actually seen on a lot of hunting videos, and I've seen it myself. You know, if you've been fortunate enough to see deer actually fight, the 2 and 3 year old deer fight more than the older deer. They're honestly, it's like they know that they can kill each other, that they can really hurt each other. And, you know, I think in some ways we have this perception that there's this bull of the woods, and I know this happens. I mean, deer are just like people. They have different personalities and different tendencies and everything. But in a lot of cases, those really big deer, they don't have the energy and the stamina to just go around fighting every buck around. They have to be, you know, they have to establish their dominance and do it wisely and pick their battles. I mean, a 4-year-old 10-point can probably beat the ever-living hell out of an older 6-year-old big 8-point, you know. Just because he's, they know, and it's just how they act, you know, that they're wise. I believe a lot of us, we talk on this podcast. I think a lot of our audience probably hunts a similar kind of landscape where we have a lot of mixed hardwood pine kind of forest and a lot of thick areas in the South because there's a lot of timber management that goes on. And when you're hunting that kind of stuff, you don't know what's going on all around you. You know, I mean, there's just so much thicket all around you. And I think you'd be wise to realize and to take into account that if you got a food plot or maybe it's a pipeline or something, and you get to this time of the year and there's small young buck spikes and little young bucks and they're harassing the does, that big deer's probably very close to you. But there's going to be a very identified period of time where he's the one actually going to be the one out there doing that. He's not going to do that to does that are a week away from coming into estrus. He's just too smart for
that. So this was a conversation I had earlier today with you, talking about how, like, when you and Colin were in town this weekend and we hunted Saturday afternoon, all day Sunday, morning and evening hunting Sunday, and then y'all made a Monday morning hunt and then rolled out, We pretty much tag teamed areas the whole time except for Monday morning. Monday morning, I dropped you a pin. I was like, I've always wanted to hunt here late season, but I got all these other spots distracting me. Y'all go here, and that's where you ended up seeing deer. Was like the spot where I was just like, go that way, you know. Yeah. But talking about thickets and not knowing, you know, what's happening even close by and not being able to see it. Saturday afternoon, you and Colin hunted, 75 yards from me? And there was a doe that came in on my boot scent trail from where you and I split off that y'all never saw that came to within bow range of me. And the only reason I didn't shoot her was because I didn't want to booger up the area because y'all were leaving your set and y'all wanted to film something the next morning. And so I did not shoot that deer because I wanted y'all to kill something. I don't need to kill any more deer. I want to, but I didn't need to shoot that doe. And so, keeping that spot unboogered was more important than shooting the deer. And then also, I saw a buck that was out of bow range about an hour before daylight. You know, 75 yards away, there's a doe that I was sworn came directly from you that you had to have seen, and you had no idea what I was talking about. And there's two of y'all in a tree. And then that happened again when we hunted the island. We ran 13 miles upriver. I saw a spike. You and I were probably 100, 120 yards apart as a crow flies, but on different sides of the same thicket. I saw a spike. Y'all saw nothing. We talk about, oh, that's bow hunting when you lose a deer or something bad happens. But that's also bow hunting is you can have an entire other reality of deer activity that's 100 yards from you that you never know about ever. That is totally different than what you're experiencing in person. And that applies to hunting in groups like we did, like one person sees something another person doesn't. Or in a bigger picture, we're talking about trail cameras earlier. Trusting in trail cameras this time of year isn't really smart because I don't know. Another thing, this is also odd. I switched to Tacticam this year. I've started getting a lot of blanks in the last 2 weeks. But I'm also getting a whole lot of running pictures, a whole lot. Like, and it's always the doe running. And then I don't have my reset speed on my Tacticam fast enough to where I would get like a buck behind it, like a buck secondary. But I know the rut's kicking off. I'm getting a lot of like blurry sprinting pictures. But I've witnessed in person deer skirt. I don't want to say that they're doing it intentionally. I think they're just following different paths than what I laid these cameras out to capture, like you said, like funnels, pinch points. I don't have any on food right now, but they're kind of like large percentage chance of capturing something coming through this area. Well, those deer are taking different routes. I'm actually seeing does being very avoiding of areas because they're tired of getting harassed because they're not ready yet. And the young bucks are pushing them around. But anyway, I saw yesterday when I hunted, I saw 6 deer come through this area that I have 2 cameras on, and I got one of them on picture. Oh, we got a picture of one of them. Mm-hmm. And so if your area is like in the rut or coming up on the rut right now, I would just be in the stand. I would not let the cameras dictate when and where you go. I would only let the wind determine that, and I would just get in the stand.
Yeah. One of the things that is really cool about hunting in the Midwest is this thing that we're talking about right now is completely different in many cases because of the open terrain. And if you've never hunted in the Midwest, if it's on your bucket list, check out our friends, 180 Outdoors, hunt180.com. If you follow them on Facebook and Instagram, you'll see how much success that they have had this past whitetail season. It's a lottery tag state. You got to put in for your lottery. Units 11 and 12 is where they're at. If you draw a tag, they've got some awesome whitetail hunts available. If you're into spring turkey hunting, you won't find a better spring turkey hunt than Southeast Kansas, I can tell you from experience. And if you're looking to make a late season, or I guess early in the year, if you want to look at it that way, January waterfowl hunt, they've got just a few spots remaining on those 3 weekends for the late season split waterfowl in Southeast Kansas. Check them out at hunt180.com, Southeast Kansas connection for guided hunt, semi-guided, leased property, or if you're looking to purchase your own hunting farm in the Southeast Kansas area, check them out, 180 Outdoors, hunt180.com. You know, it's funny, Kyler, what you just said about your hunt yesterday and all the deer that you saw and the fact that you only got one of them on camera. I killed a buck yesterday. It's a buck that I've had on camera for a while. But I watched him, and so a couple of things that you said tie into my story, so I'll just go ahead and get into my story a little bit here.
Sure.
There was a button buck involved, but in my case, they weren't together. The button buck actually came from my east, from my right. I'm sitting with my back to the south, facing north, north wind in my face. Big thicket to my east directly, like 20 yards from me, the start of the thicket to my right in the east, and then across the oak flat about 150 yards to my west, there's another little thick area that just kind of divides the oak flat. There's more open oak flat on the other side of that. My scouting and my, you know, the intel that I've gathered, the cameras and scouting, is that they use that thicket in the middle of the oak flat as kind of a staging thicket, maybe a place that they lay up during the day some and all that. But the core bedding area is the big thicket to my east and to my northeast. And I get a lot of, I've scouted a lot of activity and gotten a lot of pictures of deer transitioning back and forth. And I got my stand set up on a really well-used travel area between the two. So the button buck actually came at about 9 o'clock from my east. He came out of the thicket right underneath me, and he went out into the oak flat, and he fed all around me. And he was out there for probably 45 minutes feeding. Same thing as you, a big button buck that I didn't even realize was a button buck for a long time. I thought it was a doe, and I kept thinking, I hope she stays out there and feeds for a while because maybe something will come along through here and check her, you know. And then I finally realized it was a button buck, but a big one. But he stayed out there forever, and he was, he was healthy, but it was like he was starving to death. I mean, that sucker was just gorging. Everything he could find to eat, he was eating. You know, just, I made note of the fact that he, you know, when deer feed, they kind of up and down all the time. You know, they'll feed for a second and then throw their head up and look all around, smell, look, their ears twitch. That dude kept his head down feeding, and he would rarely look up. I mean, you could have just about snuck up on him, grabbed him by the tail, you know. He was just so into it. Hmm. And at one point, he finally threw his head up, and he started watching over there in that little thicket to the west of me, and I kept thinking, there's got to be a deer over there, but I never could see it. He even did that thing where he kind of walked that direction real curiously, and then he went back to feeding. And he finally, he just all of a sudden, just, I mean, like a light switch went off. He stopped feeding, turned around, and started walking straight to me. Not spooked, just walking. It was like, I've eaten enough, I'm leaving. And he starts walking. And he gets to about 15 yards, and he stops. And I turn and look, and the buck I shot standing out there. It's like that buck started coming, and he started leaving, like immediately. And deer was making his way through. And there were no does around. And the funny thing is, the camera's right in front of me. I watched this deer, so there was a little bit of a challenge to it. I didn't make the best shot. The recovery wasn't so bad, but it was really nervous that this wasn't going to turn out well for me because of the shot. But, you know, the deer, the button buck was standing, the way he was standing in front of me, he passed in front of the camera, and it didn't take his picture for whatever reason. You know, we've talked about that before, too. Well, there's a treetop laying there, and the big buck made a circle around the backside of that treetop so he could go over there and run that little buck, and he run him off. And I say off. He just, you know, kind of nudged him and run him. And then he turned and started walking to me to get back on the trail that actually passed right by my stand. So that one little movement took him out of the range of the camera, and if I hadn't been sitting in the stand, I'd have never knew he walked through there that morning. But he walked through there that morning just like, and I thought to myself, I've been watching this camera for a month, and I get a lot of pictures, but there's some days I don't get any. And these deer could very easily be doing just what he did and walked right through there just like he normally does. I just didn't get a picture of it that day because he didn't take, because he took a 15-yard different path for whatever reason, because of something he wanted to go take a bite of or another deer that he walked over there and scent checked before he made his way. But, you know, one thing leads to another. And I got the hunt on video. It'll make it on YouTube after Christmas sometime. But the deer starts his way towards me, and he's at about 30 yards, and he's walking towards me. He gets to about 20, and he turns broadside, and he starts walking again west to east. And I got two trees, and he's at a steady walk, but he's slowing down to feed every now and then. And when he gets between these two trees, he's broadside, so I draw. And he gets between the trees in my opening, and I've got my anchor down, and I'm starting the process of putting the pin on him. And as I'm doing that, he's feeding, and he just takes one step with his front legs kind of in my direction, and that puts him slightly quartering to me. And he stops. He's coming to a stop as he does this. And I recognized it. And I paused for a second, and then I thought, well, that's not much of an angle. And at this distance, I got him. I put my pin a little bit tucked in, a little tighter on his shoulder to compensate for the angle. And when I shot, he came absolutely unglued. I mean, as soon as the bow went off, he wheeled into the shot to turn 180 degrees and run back to the west. You know, and that was odd to me because he was going into his core area. He was going into his home bedding area, into that thick, nasty, swampy stuff to my east. And you would have thought that anything that spooked him, he would have just lunged into the thick, right? Because he was right on the edge of it. But he didn't. He wheeled. So when the arrow made impact, he was dang near facing me. Like he jumped it that quick. And I've got it on video, like I said, and you can see it. On video, it looks like he's at more of a quartering angle because the way I was self-filming in my camera was I had to kind of lean out to the right side of my stand to shoot, and the camera was out to the left side of the stand, so it's a totally different angle from where I'm aiming to the angle of the camera, right?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, man, when it hit him, when I released, I knew that my aim was good, and I knew the arrow was going right where I had the pin, but I immediately saw the turn in him, and basically, it went from me looking at the broadside of a deer, for the most part broadside, slightly quartered to looking at his shoulder and his rib cage, to basically, as the arrow's in flight, all this happens so fast, but in that moment, it feels like slow motion. As the arrow's in flight, he's turning. And I saw the arrow hit, and before I could see anything, he had spun all the way around, and he's running off parallel to me, and I can see blood just pouring out the bottom of him. And I knew I didn't pass through him. I knew it went in and came right out. Like, I knew with the way he was turning, that arrow went in, hit in his side somewhere, and went straight out the bottom of him because of his reaction. And that's exactly what happened. But I got lucky, I guess, in that it did a severe, and I sent you the picture you saw, it did an absolute severe amount of damage as that mm-hmm. happened. The deer went so deep into that thicket, and this property so hard, there's no road frontage. I have to walk down a railroad track to get to it, and it's already a major issue with that, and he went so far deep into that swamp that I had to quarter the deer up and pack him out in contractor bags. So I didn't really get to analyze it all, but just the pure trauma that was caused. I mean, I hit him perfect where I wanted to. It's just the angle got messed up with the way he reacted. I don't know if I got any vitals because it didn't go in deep enough. Mm-hmm. It went basically through his rib cage and out the bottom of his stomach, but it didn't bust his guts, if that makes any sense. Like,
yeah.
He had a hole where his intestines and his guts and stuff were starting to come out the bottom of him when I found him, but they weren't busted. There were no guts on my air. There were no guts on the ground. There was no stench. It just went, it just literally looked like I hit him with a spear straight down, and it went straight through his rib cage and out the bottom of his rib cage. And when I quartered him on the ground, he had no blood left in him. I cut his head off to have him skull mounted, and his jugular didn't even bleed. That's how much blood was on the ground. I probably tracked him 400 yards, probably 400 or 500 yards in kind of a circle. He was actually only about 200 yards from my stand. He just made a big circle, come back around into that thicket. But it was cool. You know, it was really rather have a better shot and not have all the stress and anxiety of having to wait and figure out what's going to happen here. But it was a cool experience. It was a deer that I started taking pictures of earlier in the year, and not a real big buck as far as score goes, but a heavy horn, kind of tight racked, typical Louisiana 8-point, probably 190, 195 pounds, mature buck. And yeah, man, I'm just hadn't killed a deer in Louisiana. I didn't kill a deer. Well, yeah, I did. I'm sorry, I did kill a deer in Louisiana last year. I was thinking I didn't. But I don't,
yeah.
I hunt all over the place. I hunt in Mississippi and Louisiana, and I'm fortunate enough to go hunt other places. And it's always special to me. I always like to hunt during the holidays. It's my favorite time to hunt. Just, I don't know why, I just like it. And to get to kill a buck at home on one of my own properties, it was really cool. So it was really, really awesome.
Very cool. Well, you're very lucky, man. You're decently lucky.
I told a couple of people this, and this is the gospel truth. I actually was pulling back in. I've said this many times on this podcast, and I don't mean anything by it other than it just comes up in conversation. But Mr. Warren Womack is my neighbor. And when I was pulling back in the driveway after this all-day excursion of getting this deer out, he was pulling out of his driveway. And I stopped and showed him the deer, and we got to talking. And I explained to him that, this access to this property and how difficult the whole day had been getting this deer out. And he was like, yeah, I've been doing that since 1982. He said, I don't drag them out anymore. I just quarter them up there on the ground. I was like, well, the only thing I can say is if I was better prepared and I had the kind of backpacking system to actually handle that, but packing him out in contractor bags is not exactly great. But point of what I was saying was he's one of the people I said this to, but I've said it to a couple people. There's been few times in my life that I've had a lot of hunts where, especially like when I go up to the Midwest and I get there, and I just know that it's right and the deer are really rutting hard and I know I'm hunting really good property somewhere. I'm really confident that I'm going to see deer, but I don't really know what's going to happen. Wednesday morning, I was as confident as I've ever been of what deer was coming by me and around about what time, and all he had to do was be in bow range. I obviously sat there knowing that maybe I don't see this deer. There's a couple other bucks I got on camera. Maybe I see one of them, but I was as confident as I could be that I had done my homework, I had done my scouting, and I had not stepped foot in there until that day. For that reason, it was the right day. The wind was right. The cameras had showed the activity had picked up daytime, and I knew that unless something had gone on in that area that I was unaware of, that deer was coming by me at some point during the day, and I was going to sit there all day until he did. And 10 o'clock, here he came, like clockwork.
Pointed to left field, huh?
Yep. That was one of those hunts where, I guess all the people in my, I probably said it to you, people that I talk to, my core group of friends I talk to all the time. Hey, I think I'm going to go hunt that property eventually. I'm eventually going to go in there and hunt that property. I've been talking about it, I just haven't been to it at all.
Yeah.
And I was finally like Wednesday, I was thinking it's going to warm up this weekend. Wednesday's the last day of a true north wind all day. I'm going. It's finally time. Actually, you remember when I was at your camp and I said, hey, on Sunday and Monday, I told you I had a shooter come by my stand. During,
I was going to ask you if that was it.
It was him. Both days. Yeah. Now, I didn't get his picture on Tuesday, but again, I didn't get his picture on Wednesday either, even though I watched him walk right past my stand and I shot him. He just kind of took there's a treetop laying about 15 yards to the left of my camera, and if they come around one side of it, they come right by the camera. If they go around the other side, there's a trail that kind of goes around and comes back and meets back up with the main trail, and if they take that trail, there's no way I'm going to get their picture. And then when I was trailing the deer, to the point about the trail cameras we were talking about earlier, when I was trailing the deer, he wheeled around and he ran straight away from me. And so I had to walk straight through that oak flat. I've never walked over there because I don't want to disturb the area. I just knew what was over there. I could see the trees. I knew. I could see the trails going. But when I walked over there, man, there's all kinds of sign within 100 yards of my stand. And that told me, and I saw a doe at 8 o'clock that morning out there feeding that never came close to me. And I said, you ain't no telling what's passing by there that I've never gotten a picture of. There's just as many good trees, good trails, some buck activity sign, and all that, all within 100 yards of me that this camera would never see. And I don't. It's not like I come in here and hunt all the time. I don't know what's passing by over there.
Well, the way that I think about it is, I believe statistically, mm-hmm. statistically science. I believe that we are sent, or we capture 1/4 the amount of activity of what actually goes on around our trees.
Yeah.
Okay. Or around our hunting area. And the way I've kind of like come up with that is, number one is kind of gauging what I physically see on stand versus what I capture on camera in person, you know, because I've got a couple of, I don't typically do this. I don't typically like to hunt exactly where my cameras are, because I have had a few deer be avoiding of that area after I'll hang a camera in there. And I'm not hanging them at eye level, and I use no glow and cell cameras and all that stuff. But still, like, your big worry bucks, it's no coincidence that a lot of times you only get pictures of them a time, one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times I don't have my stand right where my camera is, or sometimes it'll be 100 yards down, 50 yards down, whatever. But so I'll kind of compare what I'm seeing in person versus what I see on camera. But also, if you look at a tree, and your camera's on a tree trunk, obviously, and then you kind of think of that from an aerial view of where that camera is, the camera's going to have a detection degree of about 90 degrees. So at least 270 degrees of that tree that I can't capture. And that's only true if it's not entirely true, because that would say that, like, that tree's like in the middle of a food plot and you would have a deer walk all the way around it. You'd only get get pictures on 25% of the diameter of the tree. But the other exception, and this is what I do to kind of maximize my pictures a lot of times, and I hunt this way all the time. I always like to put some sort of boundary or blockage or something behind me where I'm hunting or where my camera is, to where a deer couldn't walk behind it. A lot of times it's a slough or a bayou or a fallen tree, or something to where, like, I know a deer has to walk around this way so I can get a picture of it, which would be a funnel or a pinch point, however you want to do it. But anyway, you're putting the odds in your favor. But I believe that you get about 25% of the photos of what actually goes on around your tree. And that helps me. I have to keep that in mind when I'm wanting to go hunt an area. I'll take a look at what my wind direction is going to be for the day, and then I'll narrow down to like three or four spots. And then out of those three or four spots, I might consider what's happening in the area. But, you know, for me, cell cameras and cameras in general, they only help me confirm maybe like the overall healthiness of like the number of deer in an area or certain deer. But I've never killed a deer patterning it off of a trail camera. That's never been something that I've ever done. I'm just looking for, hey, where's my greatest activity, and is the condition right for that right now? Go there, yes or no. Yeah. I have never hunted an area where that was so controlled, or I knew that there was nothing else that could, you could say, mess that area up or somebody else go in there. I've never hunted an area where I could be like, oh, I've got this buck at 3:43 p.m. every day. I'm going to go. It's the third day in a row. I'm going to go in there on the fourth day and kill it. That's never been something that I've ever intended to use my cell cams for.
Yeah.
So
I think the only time that you can really do that is, I guess this could apply to any time of the year, but I think it's most applicable to early season. If you have deer coming to a food, let's just say you got a corn pile or a feeder. You can eventually figure out, hey, the deer are coming to this feeder at 5 o'clock every day, you know, but mm-hmm. outside of that, this time of the year, I can say the same thing in that, this deer that I killed yesterday, obviously I did have a lot of pictures of him, but I had pictures of him literally and other deer that I would have shot, a couple of other bucks that I would have shot, in the area, but him most specifically. I had pictures of him literally every time frame of the day. I had him early, like to the point where I was scared I'd bust him if I walked in there before daylight. I had him in the middle of the morning. I had him, I think I told you, one of the days I was up at Stanger Camp, I had a picture of him at 12:30. You know, I had pictures of him in the early afternoon, late afternoon, middle of the night. You know, I literally have had pictures of him every single time of the day. So I didn't really have him patterned. I just knew that this deer frequently moved between those.
Was two, in there.
He moved between those two thickets, and he used that hardwood flat as a transition area where he fed through there, going between bedding areas. And I didn't know when it was going to happen, but I knew it was going to happen. And it's just a matter of whether he took the trail that my camera was on. And the deer, the big deer I killed in East Feliciana Parish at home a couple of years ago, the lake deer, for people that have heard the story about the deer that went in the lake, it was kind of the same thing. I started taking – I didn't kill him where my camera was. I killed him 350 yards or so, maybe a little less than that, maybe 250 yards, to the west of where I was taking his picture. But I started taking his picture on a couple of cameras in a wooded area in the daylight in the mornings – at different times of the morning. And what that told me was this deer's cruising this hardwood timber, and I know the best pinch point to catch him doing that. And sure enough, I did. And it wasn't where the camera was. The camera just told me, hey, this deer's walking around in the daylight, and he hadn't been doing that all year. So if I go hunt this pinch in the middle of this hardwood timber where I know he's checking does or doing whatever, there's a good chance that I'll catch him, and I did. You know, and I've done that a lot where – even to this point, right in the year this year, on my on another, not the property that I hunted yesterday, but the place behind my house, I've got cameras set up in multiple places that I'm either I can't shoot deer. They may be close to a stand, like I can kind of see the area where the camera is, but not at a stand. They're not in places where, oh, if I see a deer on the camera, I could shoot him from my stand. I don't have really any of those, but. Uh-huh. If I start seeing activity, to your point, I think one thing that I thought about while you were talking a while ago that I think is the point to be made is if you're, and I believe you as well, I agree with you, that you're probably only getting around 25% of what's happening around you. So if you're getting a lot of buck activity in the daylight and that's only 25%.
Ooh, yeah, four times more than that.
You know what I'm saying? That's the best way to look at it, in my opinion. Is if you're only getting 25% of the activity and you start getting an increased amount of buck activity in the daylight, well, then obviously there's something going on, right? Yeah. I think that's the best way to use cameras. So,
100%.
Anyway, we said we were going to do a short little podcast to wish everybody Merry Christmas, talk about our hunt together a little bit, talk about my kill this week, and we've made it an hour somehow. Somehow we have BS'd our way into an hour-long podcast.
We're pretty good at it.
But, so, it's been a great year for Louisiana Bowhunter, and it's been a good year for us and for a lot of the people that follow us and contribute to Louisiana Bowhunter. Want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. I would imagine that the majority of you listen to this are probably listening to this over the Christmas weekend, so hopefully you have a great Christmas, and hopefully there's a cold front coming that pushes the heat out, and we can all get back to this time of the year in the South where the hunting's getting good. And wish everybody a lot of success. Anything else you want to say before we wrap this one up?
No, man. It has been a great year. Hope everybody has a Merry Christmas and appreciate the support. Hope everybody gets a shot at the target buck this season. So
yeah.
That's it, man. Let's wrap it up.
Yep. I think we got a couple of really good weeks of hunting, maybe more than a couple, maybe three or four into January. We always seem to have that staggered rut that comes and goes all across the South. So lots to look forward to. Hope Santa Claus is good to all of you. And check us out, LouisianaBowhunter.com. If you hadn't followed our community page, go do that. Contribute there. And we appreciate everything. Merry Christmas to all of you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. If you have anybody you'd like to hear on the show, reach out to us at info@LouisianaBowhunter.com. And if you want to help support Louisiana Bowhunter, go by your local archery shop and pick up some merchandise. If you don't have any at your local shop, let us know and we'll reach out to them. Or pick up your gear at LouisianaBowhunter.com and we'll ship it out to you same day. See you next week.